Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Garrison Keillor brings the Prairie Home Love and Comedy Tour to the Washington Pavilion on Friday, August 11th at 7:30 p.m. Central Time. Keillor hosted the radio variety show Prairie Home Companion from 1974 to 2016 before retiring to spend more time writing. He currently writes a column for the Washington Post. I spent time with Garrison Keillor last week. Here's our conversation. Have you been to our Washington Pavilion, the theater where the Prairie Home Love and Comedy Tour is coming Friday, August 11th? Have you been to the theater?
I don't think I've been to the Washington Pavilion.
You play so many venues. How much does the venue make a difference?
It makes a difference to the audience, and so that makes a difference to us. But you can make any venue work, you know. I do like a venue in which the audience is not at a distance, and I love to go into the crowd. So I hope it's that sort of place.
How soon, when you're in front of a live audience, can you gauge what kind of audience they're going to be, and then do you make adjustments accordingly?
Well, this audience tends to be middle-aged people and up, and they tend to be people who have listened to the show. So it's a public radio audience. A higher proportion of reference librarians and Unitarians and bird watchers and... And a lower percentage of pheasant hunters and over the road truck drivers, but a few, you know.
Yes, right. I have a 16-year-old daughter who is thoroughly excited to see the show. What does that say about her future? That this is the highlight.
Oh, it says she has a wonderful future, and she's 16. The world is lying in wait for her, and. And I have all sorts of advice to give her. So,
well, let's get started with
have her be in touch.
Well, she's a writer, so I'm wondering if we could talk about your writing life. And you started about that age, or even younger. When you look back at the age of 75, what do you want to tell that young man about writing that you wish you had known then?
I was 16, I think, when I started out. I wrote sports for the weekly newspaper in my hometown. It was the age of the linotype and hot type and the pressmen who were alcoholic and who nonetheless could print the paper and do it very well. A pressman stood on this platform and he lifted up one enormous sheet of paper as big as a bed sheet, and he laid it down on the bed of type, and the roller came over it, and it went into the trimmer and the folder, and it came out, and there was my story on the back page. That's how I started out. It was just awesome to me, and it has remained the same. Then I went into radio. I went into this big detour, but radio still depends on writing as a way of organization and as a way of thinking. And then I retired from radio a year ago, and now I'm a writer again. And I sit at a laptop computer, which I dearly love, and I write a weekly newspaper column. I work on a screenplay. I'm finishing up a collection of limericks. I am working on a memoir. And after a year of sitting alone in a room, I feel the urge to go on the road and stand up in front of an audience again, just to see what it's like as an adventure, you know.
Do those two
parts? Sing duets with Heather Massey and do some stories with our sound effects man, Fred Newman, and sing with the band and do the news from Lake Wobegon.
Do those two parts of you feed each other, or are they sort of exclusive? You can only do one at a time.
No, they all kind of work together. It's what I set out to do back in 74 when I started the radio show. I wanted to make a show that was kind of a sandwich of the various things that I loved in radio that I heard when I was a boy back in the late 40s, early 50s, when there were still shows with actors and a band and doing scary stories and comedians and all. I wanted to do that again on the radio. It had died out about 20 years before. And so I get to do it now and on a tour with people on a bus.
Why do you think audiences remained and still remain captivated with that format that you created back in 74?
I think the variety show format is a powerful idea that that's become rare for some reason. I don't know why. But as broadcasting has more and more gone into various niches and so on, this idea of a variety show in which nothing lasts too long. We're going to do this, and then we're going to do something entirely different, I think is a powerful idea for people. And also they like the idea of improvisation and people making it up as they go along.
Do they like the behind the scenes where they can sort of see the radio, love being in the audience and sort of see that magic happen? How do you keep that pure and authentic for the audience in the room with you?
Well, the audience loves to see Fred Newman right. do his sound effects.
Yeah.
And he does everything. You know, he does a tornado. He can do a talking toilet. He can do mutant dolphins. He can do submarines and sirens and footsteps and houseflies and everything. So you have this possibility of doing stories that turn sharp corners and go in odd directions. It's just basic radio. And then I get to sing with Heather Massey, and that's a whole different thing. It's a whole pleasure singing romantic duets. Heather and I have been doing this for about 10 years, and we love the way our voices merge together, a baritone and a contralto.
Let's talk about Fred a little bit more. Does he surprise you? Does he ever make you laugh or do something unexpected? Or do you, after working with him for so many years, do you just really know what's coming next?
He makes me laugh. Sometimes the look on his face makes me laugh when he's caught leaning the other way. And I refer to cows, and he starts to do a cow, and I say, they're French cows. And so he has to do a moo with an umlaut over the O. He's amused. I'm amused. I mean, if we weren't, we would never do this, you know. I'm retired, for heaven's sake. I'm 75 years old.
Can you stump him? Can you stump him? Can you give him something that he's not up to the task for?
I'll bet I can. And believe me, I will try. But he'll do something. He'll do something that will pass. He does phone conversations very, very well, in which he represents the person at the other end of the line who is incomprehensible.
Right. And what is it about Heather? You've sung with so many partners over the years. Love and comedy. Heather brings the love, perhaps?
That too. But she's a much better singer than I am. And you always want to work with somebody who's better than you. This is true of playing tennis. It's true of singing. And so I sing so much better when I'm with her. She sings the melody, I sing the harmony. And she doesn't know the same hymns that I know because she grew up Catholic, but she knows these old love songs, and so that's what we'll do. Under the stars there's a heaven waiting for me, down in the valley so low, down where the hollows roll. Under the moon there's a place where all my dreams come true, and I will rendezvous there with you. It's a beautiful song when she sings the other half of it.
Yeah. Can we talk about poetry for a moment? Is that all right?
Of course.
What are your thoughts on sort of, the state, if you will, of American poetry? Are you optimistic for what new is being produced?
Everybody is a poet, it seems to me. Everybody. It's more dominant than ever among people your daughter's age. Every high school student I know of is writing poetry, whether they care to, you know, publish it or not is another thing. So poetry has this beautiful liberating effect on people, whether the poems are anything that interests me or not. You recognize how freeing this is. It's hard to write fiction. It's very hard, and it defeats people all the time. Writing a screenplay, writing a play is even harder than prose fiction. But poetry, you just start with one line and it just goes from there. The poetry that I write now is all light poetry. I'll do some in the show, limericks and some sonnets. But the poetry that people are writing seriously is all about the dilemma of life and the mystery of love. And this is the one form that opens the door for people so that they can say things they would never know how to say in conversation.
What is it about limericks that sort of captivates you still?
A young fellow from Pocatello said, "Why is my urine bright yellow? Was it something I ate, or could it be Kate, whom I dated on Saturday?" Hello. It's a puzzle, you know. It's a little puzzle, and a few limericks are really good and memorable.
Yeah.
And then the rest, you just crumple them up and you throw them away. It's a very high casualty rate in writing limericks, and it's the first sort of poem I wrote when I was a kid, and because I grew up fundamentalist, and when I heard a dirty limerick, it just blew me apart. Mm. This convulsive. Involuntary laughter, you know, in which stuff comes out of your nose, hit me hard when I was a kid, and it's a kind of laughter that becomes very rare as you get older.
What's the
last?
Can't
remember the last time I laughed really, really hard, but it probably was at a limerick.
What's your relationship to that casualty rate? How do you feel about the crumpling and the throwing away? Does that impact you, or is it just part of the job?
No, it's just part of the act of writing poems, limericks, or anything else is disposing of the wounded, and and you don't think too hard about it.
Why is a screenplay or a play so much more challenging? What is it about those forms that?
Because it's a problem of suggestion. The writing is only part of it, and then the acting and the direction take over, so that a large part of writing a dramatic work is unwriting. It's removing the unnecessary, and the unnecessary is a lot more than you would think. A great deal can be done with less, and that's a problem for a writer. A writer wants to solve everything with words, and with a dramatic work, it's the secret lies elsewhere.
At your stage in your career, is it difficult to find someone who can edit you well, or? I mean, do you find people just saying, well, you wrote it, it's brilliant, let's go publish? Do you have a good editor or good feedback?
I have a terrific editor for the column that I write for the Washington Post. He is retiring, though, and so somebody else will come along. I can edit myself if I have to, but I really appreciate having another person who sees it, of course, from the outside, and who can say blunt things. A newspaper editor, a lot of what they do is just to bring you in line with the Associated Press style book, but which I often disagree with, but
I think the new edition just hit the stands.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Well, you rush right out.
I'll avoid that one as I've avoided the others.
We'll take a break and return with more from Garrison Keillor. You're in the Moment on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Let's get back to our conversation with Garrison Keillor. The Prairie Home Love and Comedy Tour is at the Washington Pavilion on Friday, August 11th at 7:30 p.m. Here's more of our conversation. One of those recent columns in the Washington Post dealt with the idea of extinction and sort of the slipping away of everything from giraffes to Episcopalians. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on public radio and how it thrives in the future instead of fading.
I think public radio has become the mainstream. It started out as an alternative, but the radio that it was an alternative to has mostly disappeared. And commercial radio has gone down the road of niche broadcasting. You tune in a station and you can tell, you know, they are appealing to people between the ages of 12 and 19. And other people are going for males, you know, between the age of 45 and 95, whereas public radio, I think, is succeeding in going right down the middle of the road, and they're talking to people who have a broad sense of curiosity about the real world, who don't require preaching, who are not out simply to reinforce their own biases, and to me that's the mainstream. That's the heart of any of any community, community of pragmatists, and I think that public radio speaks to them.
You also wrote about a recent class reunion. What stays with you from that experience?
My high school class, I love going to their reunions. We hold them every year now since we're elderly. And it's the broadest group of people I find myself in. I mean, on Sunday morning, I find myself in an Episcopal church, and it's fairly narrow. It's, you know, it's mostly middle class and fairly liberal people, not entirely. But my high school class includes people who are still farming. It includes suburban people who I assume are Republicans. It includes people who made their living plumbing, working with their hands, working in auto parts stores, lumber yards, people who know much more than I do about construction and about how things work. And so when I get together with them, I feel as if I'm meeting America in a broad sense of the term. A much broader group than the group of people from college, you know, who I still see, who tend toward the arts, who tend toward writing, who include more journalists than the general population. Mm-hmm. So I like that. I like that. I like to find out what it is people feel strongly about at this point in their lives. And I discover it's their family.
Right.
It's their family and their grandchildren.
Yeah. For you too? Family and grandchildren?
No, I'm not as... If the truth be told, I'm not as much of a family man as I wish I were sometimes, if only because I'm gone so much. Mm. I'm married to a woman who tolerates this very well because she was a traveling musician once herself. And so she understands the necessity of the road life. Now that I'm retired, I'm home a good deal more of the time, but I'm not as close to my first cousins as I wish I were. My aunts and uncles are all gone. It's my first cousins now who I sort of miss.
Do you spend time thinking about what's next? Do you spend time thinking about legacy? What occupies your mind on a regular basis?
I live sort of day by day, really. I work on my memoir, and the memoir takes you back into the past. But the limericks in the limerick book, the screenplay, the newspaper column, these are all very much of the present, and so that's where my mind goes. I stay away from the front page of the newspaper a good deal. I read some, I read a few things that catch my eye, but I don't try to stay completely up to date on things.
I've read much of your work, and I remember specifically there was an essay you had written, I can't remember the year, it was in National Geographic, of all places, and it was this sense of coming home, and at the very end, you're at the end of the bar, sort of being an outsider looking in. And I'm curious, after so many years of writing in so many different places, do you remember all of it? Does it ever surprise you that you wrote something at a certain age?
Do I remember what I wrote? No, I don't. I think it's the act of writing that is intriguing, and a writer is a person who writes, not a person who has written. That's my philosophy. And if you are too engaged or attached to what you did in the past, it will dull your interest in the next thing. And it's the next thing that really interests me. I have all these projects going on, and yet I have a vision of a Western that I'm going to write. I haven't even begun it yet, but I know that there are going to be two cowboys, and there's going to be an English gentleman, and there's going to be a beautiful woman who's the town librarian, and there's going to be a saloon keeper, and there's going to be a faithful Indian companion who quotes Ralph Waldo Emerson. That's about all I know about it, but it's out there in the future,
right.
And I'm going to write this, whether I write it as a movie or something for the stage, or what it's going to be, I don't know.
So then what's your structure? Are you a disciplined writer? How do you take an idea like that and then bring it to fruition?
You get up early in the morning. You go to bed early at night, for one thing. And you get up early in the morning. I get up about 3 hours before my wife does. And so I have 3 hours. Two cups of coffee in 3 hours in dim light to sit and write. And then it's time for breakfast. And then after breakfast, I have a few more hours. And then I may have some more time later in the day, but I don't count on it. I count on having 6 hours in the morning. And if you have 6 hours, six disciplined, dedicated hours, there's just no limit to how much you can do. That's all you need.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
Do you write on the road then, as you do the, Prairie Home Love and Comedy Tour?
Do you bring a notebook,
laptop with you?
I do. I love writing in hotel rooms.
Yeah.
They're so completely neutral. We stay in Holiday Inn Express. We stay in sort of generic hotel rooms. They're all alike. And I never want to stay in higher class or historic hotels. I just don't care. I love a hotel room that feels like a dormitory.
Yeah.
And all you need is a desk, and you need a desk lamp, and you'd like to have a plug-in that's on top of the desk that you don't need to crawl around in under the desk to find. And that's all you need.
It is almost state fair time in Minnesota. Do you go to the state fair?
I do. And this year I do a show as well
at
the grandstand. And my daughter and I go. She loves the fair. She's 19. Mm. And we do the same things. Every year we go to the livestock barns and we have a couple of corn dogs. We usually have a taco. We have the corn on the cob. We always have cheese curds, and we just walk around, look at people.
What do you talk about with your daughter? What are the conversations that keep coming back to as father and daughter?
What do we talk about? She's gone most of the summer. She's off at her summer camp, and she has a job taking care of small children, which she loves. We talk about whatever we're looking at, and sometimes we don't need to talk. We just walk around. We still hold hands. This gives people a kind of a start to see a man holding hands with a young woman, but we don't care.
It sounds
our
nice.
Our last stop is always the river raft ride, which we've been going on since she was a little kid. And we call it, she calls it the pee ride.
Because
wherever I sit, that's the low part of the raft, and the water comes up and it soaks my pants, and it looks like I'm an old man who needs to see a urologist.
And she still delights in it.
She still does. She gets a big kick out of it. It's our annual joke.
Yeah. Garrison Keillor, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. I want to say thank you so much for your time, and I hope you enjoy the theater in Sioux Falls when you arrive.
Oh, we're going to. Thank you, Lori.
Garrison Keillor brings the Prairie Home Love and Comedy Tour to the Washington Pavilion on Friday, August 11th. That's at 7:30 p.m. Central. Tickets are available at the Washington Pavilion box office.